And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am your host, Chip Patterson, and we are going to keep the 2013 preview series rolling with the mighty SEC as the conference that has dominated the sport for the past 7 years. You know, they got some contenders for title number 8, and joining me as we are here just a matter of days away from the kickoff of the season is my good friend, Jerry Hinnon. Jerry, it is great to have you back on the podcast.
Man, it is so good to be podcasting again. This must be what the Swallows returning to Capistrano like. Like, this is home, man. This podcast is home.
Do you have any preseason rituals? Like, any weird, quirky thing? Aside from, like, obviously, you crush steel all the way through. But, you know, is there anything else that in your mind before the season you always like to do?
I like to stock up on alcohol. Does that...
Yeah, that's like preparing for the apocalypse. Anything else?
Let's see. Well, I read my preview magazines until they become dog-eared, and the covers fall off of them. There's that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think those would be the two big... The big one.
The alcohol and the preview magazines. Stock up for the season. Now that you're in Birmingham, you don't have to worry about making one grocery run a month also.
No, this is another highly positive thing. For any listeners who don't know, I only this summer moved from the Navajo Reservation in Arizona back to my home state of Alabama, and the reservation is dry. So about that previous comment, if I wanted a beer on a Saturday – that would have hypothetically meant a 3-hour run there and back off the red. So, yes, that's definitely a fringe benefit of moving back out.
Well, you are back there in Birmingham, right there in the heart of SEC country, so I know you feel at home in your heart. We got some newcomers to the SEC this year. We have four hopeful coaches, and there's so much momentum. You know, the big turnout at Neyland Stadium for Butch Jones and Tennessee's spring game. Kentucky, now with Mark Stoops, has a school record turnout for the spring game. Obviously, Brett Bielema, you know, that was the big surprise of the whole coaching cycle. And the Auburn Tigers have Gus Malzahn back, and certainly there are high expectations there. What do you think, for each one of these first-year coaches, what's going to make a successful season? And this can be a win total. This could be certain key games. Because as I'm looking at the SEC, Jerry, I don't know exactly if there's going to be a possibility to crack the top three or four in each division. And if you're not able to do that, that's you know, has you at around, what, a 2-6, 3-5 SEC record?
Yeah.
You know, what is going to make a good season? And let's start with Butch Jones at Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I'll just go ahead and say I think Tennessee, Auburn, and Arkansas are all in more or less the same boat. You know, they all none of them made a bowl game last year. Auburn and Arkansas were nowhere close. You know, Tennessee hasn't been to a bowl game now for two seasons running there at the end of the Derek Dooley era. Or error, ha ha ha. That's a lot of Tennessee fans would
jokes.
Say. Yeah. So I think they're all right in that neighborhood where 6-6 is acceptable, you know, given where they've been the last couple of years. And, you know, anything better than that is a success. I think a winning regular season for any of those teams is going to be viewed, and I think correctly, you know, as a successful season. But at the same time, these are proud programs. You know, these teams all play each other, too. Auburn actually has Tennessee outside of conference. I guess Arkansas and Tennessee, I don't think, play each other off the top of my head. But, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, all of them being in that same area and getting to face each other head-to-head. Auburn and Arkansas obviously play, too. So, you know, I think it's going to be right there, kind of who wins those couple of critical games. And, you know, a bowl game will do it. 7 wins would be good. 8 and above are going to be a smashing success.
Right. Because with 8 and above, you assume that you win all of your – non-conference games, which for a lot of these teams, it is it's going to be, you know, nothing easy, certainly.
Well, no, Tennessee's not. They're going to Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, I think the world of Butch Jones, but he's not winning an Austin Stadium.
And, you know, you touched on the proud fan bases. That's where I'm kind of looking at the SEC, and especially as we start to discuss adding potentially a ninth game to that SEC schedule.
Yeah.
These are a lot of proud fan bases, and there can only be, you know, seven teams that win every single Saturday that it's a full conference slate. So who's going to end up getting left out? And if these teams are, you know, starting to turn it around, you know, if you say that a 6-6 could be something that for Auburn, Arkansas, or Tennessee, you know, does that mean Vandy takes a step back? Do you think that Ole Miss or Mississippi State see themselves sliding?
I think Vandy and Mississippi State are two candidates you have to look at, you know, to maybe take a step back. Yeah, I think Mississippi State has sort of taken advantage a little bit, certainly last year of Arkansas and Auburn just being such complete disasters. You know, Vandy has been very good the last couple of years, but they've lost, you know, their starting quarterback, kind of going through some off-field turmoil, you know, that's probably going to keep them without wide receiver Chris Boyd for, you know, a while, let's say, and their schedule's gotten a lot tougher too. I think those would be the places you would expect to, you know, the Auburns and the Arkansas and the Tennessees to take a step forward, because they're not getting it off the top of either division. As you point out, the top three teams or four teams in the West, in both divisions are pretty set, and that's why, you know, despite the pride that we talked about in these, you know, in Auburn, in Knoxville, these places, you're still going to see some satisfied fans if they go 7-5. I don't think anyone, you know, in Auburn is necessarily expecting to challenge for an SEC
right.
title against, you know, with Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia all on the schedule. No one in Arkansas is expecting Bielema to come in, you know, and topple the Tide in year one, at least no one rational, let's say. You know, I think Tennessee, you know, those fans, it's been a while since they've had like an 8, 9, 10 win season. So I think they're probably, you know, SEC fans get stick for being, you know, over the top in their expectations. But, you know, honestly, what I found is that, you know, they're fairly, most of them, not all of them, there's always a few,
few crazies,
you know, diehard zealots, let's say, out there that expect a national title every year. But most of them, I think, are fairly realistic, you know, and just want to see their team compete each week, want to see improvement year to year, and want to beat the teams that they feel like they should compete with. And if, you know, Auburn and Arkansas and Tennessee do that this season, I think their fans will be happy. And, you know, again, as for Kentucky, I mean, Mark Stoops apparently could run for governor at this point.
Yeah.
There, in the Bluegrass State, well, you know, not the Louisville vote, but everywhere else. You know, I think they're a team that if they even win, you know, 4 or 5 games, have some actual offensive excitement, which has been an extremely short supply, you know, the folks in Lexington will be happy. I think a bowl, you know, for the Wildcats is a year away, and I think they would understand that.
Well, all right, I'm going to toss this to you, and I'd like to hear what you think about it. For especially these first-year coaches, but just in general with a lot of the SEC teams that are not right there at the top competing for the division title, particularly in November, I would argue that a strong performance in the bowl game could override a few disappointing losses if it's 6-6 or 7-5. You know, if
yeah.
like I'd almost rather go 6-6 as a fan of Tennessee, for example, and have there be a couple of embarrassing losses, but then win the bowl game just because there is such a lasting impression of that bowl game, and the
yeah.
SEC, when they do get beat in bowl games, all of a sudden that's going to be, you know, the front story. Like, look at the Big Ten team. Look at Mississippi State getting beaten by Northwestern, and all of a sudden that game becomes, you know, the top headline when you're looking at the January 1st bowl games.
Yeah, there's something to that. I definitely think, you know, college football fans are human beings, and I think every human being has, you know, the psychological, what's the term for it, the recency effect or whatever, that we tend to weigh the most recent evidence in an issue more heavily than we weigh evidence that, you know, is further back or something like that. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but the point is that no one thinks Florida is going to win the SEC East this year, despite the fact they went 11-1, sort of lost to Georgia in arguably fluky circumstances with the 6 or 7 turnovers or whatever. And no one is taking them all that seriously this year, mostly because they got blown out by Louisville in a Sugar Bowl that, you know, really made no difference to them. So I think there's definitely something to that, that, you know, winning the bowl game can kind of polish up maybe sort of middle-of-the-road regular season. At the same time, you look at a season like Auburn in 2011, you know, where the Tigers beat Virginia in the Chick-fil-A Bowl pretty handily. But at the same time, I don't think anyone in Auburn was doing cartwheels after being blown away by Georgia, being blown away by Alabama. You know, I think lost to LSU pretty handily that season as well. So, you know, it depends, again, on, I think, the general direction of the program and how each team is performing relative to its peers. You know, I think, like I said, Kentucky, you know, no one in Lexington is going to lose any sleep over losing their game to Alabama this season. But, you know, if they lose to Vanderbilt 40-0 again, that's when maybe things – the honeymoon would be over for Mark Stoops, so to speak.
Do you think that Kentucky gets 2 wins in conference play this year?
I don't know about 2. They're going to win 1.
Right. That's kind of where I am right now,
go
too.
Go winless 2 seasons in a row. You know, you have to be, like, not just bad, but unfortunate to go winless 2 seasons in a row in the SEC. So I'm expecting 1, whether it's Missouri or Vanderbilt or maybe even Tennessee. But 2 are a little bit hard to come by. If you're talking about 2, you know, then you're looking at 5 wins and a 3-game improvement from last season. I think Kentucky's going to be a lot better. I think a healthy Max Smith really gives Neil Brown some options in installing his Texas Tech-esque offense there. Stoops has a lot to work with on the defensive line, in particular Mr. Cobble, Dante Rumpf, an excellent pair of defensive linemen there. So there's going to be dramatic improvement, but there's still so far to go when you're talking about Kentucky. You know, and unlike Auburn, who I think most people would say, you know, was even worse than Kentucky in terms of how badly they were beaten each week, the yardage margins, you know, their performance outside of conference. You know, I think Auburn sort of ended up taking the claim as the worst team in the SEC last year,
right.
But they can still point to some recruiting successes in the past that Kentucky can't necessarily point to for reasons for a quick turnaround. I think it's going to be, you know, Stoops is obviously recruiting out of his mind right now, just pillaging Ohio left and right for anything that's not nailed down by Urban Meyer pretty much. But it's going to take more than a couple of classes to rebuild, you know, what Rich Brooks built there at Kentucky.
As we're sort of getting here set, just again, just days away from the 2013 season, I want to ask you, give me one team that you think is being overlooked a little bit heading into the season by fans and or pundits, and,
yep.
And one team that you think is a little bit higher than people expect, and they might their fans might be coming back to earth once we get a couple weeks into the season.
Yeah, well, anybody who I think saw my sort of team-by-team prediction for the SEC probably can guess where I'm going with this. The underrated team to me by far is Ole Miss. I think the Rebels are in for a, you know, 8, 9, possibly even 10-win season this season. You know, I ranked them, I think, number 9 in my preseason top 25 when none of our other CBS experts had them in the top 25. So I'm clearly on a very thin limb here, but I've got to say it. I think Hugh Freeze did a remarkable job last season. That team was better than its record. They finished 6-6 and then won their bowl game, but they had Texas A&M beat. They had Vanderbilt beat, you know, and just made a couple of plays down the stretch that kind of made all the difference. You know, could have beaten LSU very easily, gave up a late punt return for a touchdown. You know, in looking at how good a team is, you don't always want to look at what their record actually was. You want to look at what their record should have been.
Right.
And Ole Miss should have been 8-4 last year, you know, at minimum, basically. And so you think about that, and then you think about the fact that they return everybody off that team. They return Bo Wallace. They return Dante Moncrief. They return Denzel Ekandiche. They return Sanquez Golson and Charles Sawyer at the corners. all of that, and then you add in, you know, possibly the best recruiting class in the nation last year, or at least the best one, maybe not, you know, that didn't head to Tuscaloosa. You know, all the stars that got lined up from that class give them the kind of depth that they didn't necessarily have last season. I really think this is going to be a top at least 15 team to get Texas A&M and LSU at home. I think they are really, really going to surprise some people.
You think that the turnover issues sort of get cleaned up? I think they were like 13th in total turnovers lost. I mean, granted, they still forced a bunch too, but that's Bo Wallace cleaning up some of his plays, not throwing as many interceptions, and that's also counting on, you know, them continuing to force turnovers on the defensive side.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, turnovers are an inherently fluky statistic unless you're somebody like Alabama or Oregon that just forces them in bunches year after year after year. Anyways, I would expect Wallace, to be a little bit more cautious with the ball. I think he'll get a little bit better protection. You know, most of the line is returning intact as well. You know, should have an even stronger running game. I think running back Itavius Mathers is probably due for a bit of a breakout. You know, I would expect that not to be as big of an issue as it was last year.
And who's your team that you think other people might be a little too high on and might come back down to earth?
Yeah, I think there's two candidates here. One of them is Texas A&M and one of them is Georgia for basically the same reason, and that's that their defense just simply isn't as good as the defenses that the other, you know, divisional title contenders boast. Now, you know, you can't knock either the Aggies or the Bulldogs' offenses. Aaron Murray, Johnny Manziel, you know, a ton of receivers. Veteran offensive lines, you know, incredible running backs. I think Todd Gurley may be the best running back in the country. I was so impressed with his freshman season last year. But you're also looking at major issues on defense. You know, Texas A&M lost to Montre Moore, very underrated nose guard in Spencer Neely, you know, some other key pieces here and there. Georgia lost even more than that. They have plenty of talent coming back, but Georgia's talent is going to take a little while to gel, and they don't have the time to gel. They play Clemson right off the bat. They play South Carolina week two, LSU, I think, as the fourth game of the season, week five. If that, you know, baptism by fire for those guys, you know, takes a little while, you know, Georgia could already be staring at like three losses by the midway point of the season. So for me, you know, overrated, I think it's kind of a tie. Texas A&M has an easier schedule, but Georgia, I think, is a little likely to be a little bit better, you know, mainly because of those defensive issues. It's going to be a blast watching their offenses, but there's going to be a lot of shootouts, and you just can't always necessarily expect to win shootouts.
One of my favorite things about college football is as the television demand, you know, a lot of people talk about how television and its influence on the game has hurt it. One way that it's helped it is that it has really increased the amount of premier non-conference games when we have football's grand kickoff. And in this case, the SEC being, you know, one of the most watched conferences has a very loaded opening weekend with North Carolina at South Carolina and Ole Miss Vanderbilt on Thursday, the very first game of the season. You got Mississippi State traveling. Mississippi State not traveling, going to Houston to face Oklahoma State. Alabama plays Virginia Tech. Louisiana Lafayette at Arkansas. Don't sleep on that game. You got Washington State and Auburn. You've got Georgia and Clemson, like you just mentioned, and LSU at TCU. So now, Jerry, what is I've been asking for Power Fives. You know, what is the five games that are just can't miss from that opening weekend?
Okay, well, first of all, Georgia-Clemson, to me, is the marquee matchup there. Those teams are going to score a lot of points. Clemson, you know, is going to go fast. Hodge Boyd, Sammy Watkins against Georgia defense that, like I just said, may need a little while to get its bearings on one side. The other matchup is Aaron Murray and Gershel against Clemson defense that has some of the same issues that Texas A&M and Georgia does. That game will not surprise me at all if it's in the high 30s, low 40s. For both teams, I think it should come down to the wire. It's going to be a classic. So that would be number one. Number two for me is LSU-TCU. You know, Gary Patterson is going to have his frogs ready to play. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't think they've quite have enough offensively, you know, to beat John Chavis defense with any kind of consistency. You know, it's going to be another one of these sorts of, you know, in doubt going into the fourth quarter unless Miles Teams makes, you know, a big play on special teams or defense that really sort of seals the deal kind of game. But, you know, I don't expect the Horned Frogs to lay down at all. Let's see, for number three, you know, I'm going to say Louisiana Lafayette and Arkansas. I really want to see what Brett Bielema's Arkansas team looks like. You know, Brandon Allen's taking over as quarterback there. It's just such a wrenching shift from, you know, Bobby Petrino, you know, his sort of very balanced offense, and then John L. Smith's sort of chaotic offense
right.
in a lot of ways to, you know, this Bielema-owned, you know, ground him and pound him kind of game. But Mark Hudspeth's team at Louisiana Lafayette, loves playing the big boys. We saw him almost knock off Florida last season. You know, that is, again, a very well-coached team. Terrence Broadway, their dual threat
very quarterback, good
quarterback. Guy you really have to watch. An upset in that game would not shock me, but even if we don't see it, you know, the Hogs are just such kind of an open-ended question mark there. I think you got to tune in. For number four, let's say Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. You know, Ole Miss, again, like I said, I think is going places. This is a chance for them to prove that they're really as good as, well, at least I think they are anyway, going on the road to a place where James Franklin has really improved the home field advantage there in Nashville. The doors have been very, very tough at home under Franklin. I think they're like, you know, 11-5 against the spread.
And they battled with South Carolina. That South Carolina Thursday opener last year, you know, Vanderbilt hung tough and did not make it easy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they did that to Arkansas a couple of years ago. That's not going to be an easy game. It's not really easy for anyone going to Nashville these days. But if Ole Miss is the team I think they are, they'll still come out with a win. And for number five, let's see. Let's go to North Carolina and South Carolina. I mean, this is, you know, kind of amazing that this could be the fifth best matchup in the SEC of the week. You know, North Carolina obviously is going to have a great offense with Larry Fedora controlling things, but you got Jadeveon Clowney, you've got Connor Shaw, who, you know, has not always been at his best on the road, but man, there in Columbia, he has been outstanding. You know, the 35-7 win over Georgia last year tells you about all you need to know about how well the Gamecocks tend to play at home. I think this is going to be one that the Gamecocks should be able to put away in the fourth quarter. But anytime you get, you know, two BCS, you know, definitely bowl-bound teams together on opening night, I mean, you can't ask for a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, no, this it is funny that is, you know, we're sitting here, we haven't even mentioned Virginia Tech, Alabama, because
oh shoot,
no, and I would not put Virginia Tech, Alabama in front of any of these games. I'm right there with you.
Honestly, like that game doesn't excite me because. Anyone who watched a lot of Auburn last season and saw what Scott Leffler did to that offense, and admittedly he was, you know, not working with a ton of, you know, offensive skill talent, certainly outside of the running back position. We've seen what Gus Malzahn thinks of Kyle Frazier. He's been moved to safety. You know, the wide receivers have just not been impressive, but, you know, I did not see enough from Auburn's offense last season to make me think that a Scott Leffler offense is going to have any chance against an Alabama team that's been preparing for that game all summer. I think that one's decided by 3 or 4 touchdowns.
Virginia Tech's issues, even beyond scheme, is just going to be an unbelievable depth problem because of all the injuries that they've suffered. Jerry, right now, I think I counted this up the other day, 25 players that are on the dress squad for the Alabama game for Virginia Tech will be making their college football debut. 15 redshirt freshmen and 10 true freshmen that have never played a college football game are going to be dressed out to go up against the back-to-back national champions.
Chip, I know, you know, we're supposed to be saving our picks for next week's Weekend Picks Panel podcast, which you will have to tune in for that, anyone who's listening, Tom Fornelli and I getting the band back together for that. But I'll just say that the spread right now, the last I saw, was 18.5 points.
Over.
That strikes me as a little low. I'll just I'll just put it that way.
All right, so real quick before we let you go, you know, I appreciate. Remember, his Power Five was Georgia, Clemson, TCU, LSU, Louisiana Lafayette, Arkansas, Ole Miss at Vandy, and North Carolina at South Carolina. Do you think, in your gut, that Johnny Manziel suits up for the Aggies against Rice?
Yes, he does. I mean, have we heard anything about this for a week now? You know, I don't see the evidence that the NCAA is going to need to really put him on ice. You know, there just seems to be no one who's necessarily willing to talk to them, no substantial sort of proof that he actually got paid. It defies common sense. Like, nobody's going to sign 4,400 autographs out of the kindness of their heart. But there's no proof of it, you know, and I think Manziel's going to play, and hey, that's the way, honestly, it ought to be. Johnny Manziel, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, should not have to sit out the season for signing autographs. That's my viewpoint.
You want to hear this new crazy thought that I've sort of hatched?
Yep.
Again,
yep.
No inside sources on this. This is just my new theory. You continue the investigation through the Rice and through the Sam Houston State game as an advantage so that when Manziel does take the field against Alabama, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart have seen no film on whatever changes that they've made with Jake Spavital as the new offensive coordinator and any of the new wrinkles that involve Manziel in that offense. It will be a competitive advantage for Texas A&M to keep Manziel out of the Rice and Sam Houston State game.
Well, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it would be, I don't know if you want Johnny Manziel's first live action of the season to come against Alabama's defense.
Yeah.
So that's the other way to look at it. Maybe they split the difference and he sits out Rice and plays against Sam Houston State.
Maybe. I'm just saying, I thought about it the other day, and it's the conspiracy theorists on the message board. You know, y'all can run with that one. There's no sources on it, by the way. I'm not standing by it. Anyway, thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. This has been fun. It is good to get back podcasting once again.
Absolutely.
Remember, you can get all the Eye on College Football podcasts by subscribing to us on iTunes. Review it. Rate us. Tell us what you want to hear on these shows during the season. We will be looking for feedback from you all year. For Jerry Hennen, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks for listening.